Sonic's Out Loud is firing up our mics, connecting those headphones as we search the community for things to expound upon. We keep the banter friendly, the conversation somewhat on topic, and have fun doing it. This week, we're spouting off about different types of Linux users. Let's get into episode 72. With me today are my two very fun, very snarky co-hosts, Matt and Nate. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm actually really glad Matt finally showed up. Makes me happy.
I know. It took him a while today.
I was like really missing him. I had like this like pit in my stomach.
No. Let's be real. You weren't missing me. You were missing the fact that I'm usually the one giving you crap for being late. And I'm the one, now you get to give it back, and I'm late.
Yes, that's why he's dishing extra crap this week. Definitely.
I wouldn't say I was missing that, but I was concerned you weren't going to be here.
But he is. He made it.
I don't believe you for some reason.
Matt, just like Megatron said to Optimus Prime, what would you be without me? You know, I'm Optimus here. Not.
And we do have all kinds of fun stuff to talk about this week. I'm kind of interested in where this topic will go. This one was pulled into our list of discussion choices by Nate, and it is, what are the different types of Linux users out there? And I think I've gone through different phases. I'm a different kind of Linux user now than I was when I first started out, when I first jumped into it. I was definitely extremely research heavy, gung-ho, distro hopping, all kinds of fun stuff. And now it is all about, can I get my work done? That's the most important. So what was some of your thoughts behind this as you were pulling this topic together?
So I was actually inspired by the latest episode of Linux Unplugged, the Jupiter Broadcasting show. And it wasn't actually about necessarily the content of the show. Like, that wasn't really what they were talking about at all. But I was just kind of marveling when I was going through their show notes about, it's all about NixOS right now. And I remember like 5 years ago, it was all about ArchOS or Arch Linux, whatever they call it.
Right.
And then also like somewhere in there, it was also all about Ubuntu. We go through like these almost kind of ADHD interests. Not to say any of it's bad. I think it's very interesting. I like how they're chasing the new shiny. It's very funny, but I think that's kind of not funny. It's entertaining, yes. To me, it made me think, I'm not that kind of Linux user. I've played with Nix just a little bit and it does nothing for me. But then I'm like, well, what is it that I'm missing that it just doesn't do anything for me? And that's actually then where I fell into the idea of, maybe I'm just not that type of Linux user. I've been on OpenSUSE or some flavor of OpenSUSE now for 11 years now. What year is it? 2023? 13 years? So it's been kind of the same thing for quite a while. And I'm very happy here. And I try the distributions, but I just find that I'm just not excited by these other distributions. So then that's when it got me thinking, like, am I the kind of user that says, don't change anything? I have no beard. Am I a don't change anything neckbeard? Neckbeard and spirit, obviously. So I have it the way I want it. Don't mess me up. Maybe I lean into that camp a little bit. I know we all know those kind of people. They run XFCE. They like their Debian just as it is. They're probably like a version behind or something like that. They just haven't quite made the commitment. That's one kind of a Linux user. And I don't think I'm quite a neckbeard though either. Matt, he is a neckbeard of sorts, or at least he has a beard. But you're not a don't change anything either though, Matt. So you don't really fall into that camp entirely.
No, I don't have a full beard going on. Not as bad as some of my beards have been. But to answer your question, no, I'm not someone that falls into that camp. I tend to very much be more kind of like where Wendy's at right now. I'm much more the pragmatist. Can I get my stuff done? To me, there are tools to get a function and job done. I don't really care about all the philosophical kind of stuff that goes with it to a point. You know, privacy and all, you can get into some of the more philosophical ends of it, like privacy and security and all that stuff.
A lot of nuance.
Like anything, there's nuance in it. But for me personally, no, I am not into going that technical route. That is my wall. Like, I just have no interest in it. I enjoy exploration and all the fun stuff of like distro hopping. And like, I went through my phase, like Wendy mentioned, I very much went through my phase. I used the most weird esoteric distros and UIs and everything else. Now it's more about application exploration for me, where it's finding new apps and that kind of stuff. That's where I get my enjoyment. And it's really not so much the UI and all the other stuff. Like, I like trying out things like Ubuntu Budgie, or I like trying things that are more consumer facing, I guess would probably be the best way. Hmm. I view Linux for me now as where I could be perfectly content in SteamOS.
Really?
That's where I'm at.
Even for all your day-to-day stuff?
It offers everything I need. It gives me Plasma, which is the one thing I care about. Don't stick me on GNOME. That's all I'm going to ask, because I'll bash my head through the probably the window. Sorry, guys, that like GNOME is just not for me.
Right.
You like it from a distance.
I appreciate what they try to do. I understand what they're doing. It's just it's not for me. SteamOS could be perfectly content with, because I can install Flatpaks, app images, snaps with some coaxing on that one. But all the applications I need would be right there. So as I've gotten into my Linux journey down the various roads that you lead on, for me, I found that at the end of the day, it's the apps that matter and the workflow that I develop on Linux that matters most to me. I don't care about a lot of the more nuancey things that a lot of people are going to argue.
So I probably should have listed all the four different categories that I thought of, and maybe there's some others. But so the ooh, new shiny, you're kind of a new shiny, but you're not really a new shiny. And there's, I just want to play my games or get my work done. That's another category. And DIY. And then I just have work to do. I don't care about anything else. You're not necessarily, I don't change anything. You want to play with new applications, but you don't want to be interfered by the underpinning bits. That's kind of what I'm picking up.
The best way for me is like with the Kodi stuff I'm doing. Like, I don't mind playing with the bits and the DIY portion, or if I just want to play my games. I just want to set up my home theater system. Once it's set up, it's a really, for me, it's done. That's the project that I needed it for. So, like, I am not against the work that it takes for some of the stuff to do. That's totally fine with me. Setting up a Chimera OS machine or, you know, any of that kind of stuff, I'm fine with that. I would say I'm more of a mix of, I'm not the neckbeard, because I'm always the one out of everybody on the entire network. I'm the only one that says, use the GUI. Like, out of the entire network.
You definitely are the one who screamed the loudest about it. So it's more of a, once I get it set up, this is an appliance and I want it to just run. And I've had kind of this mixed bag experience. I've been the new and shiny Linux user before. Mm-hmm. And then once I found that Linux home, that kind of workflow, it became more of a, now I just have work to do. I got it figured out what I wanted. It needs to just work. And I've recently been playing with Fedora. And Fedora was my first home. Actually, Corora was my first home, but it was based on Fedora. And after running Manjaro and or Garuda for the last, I think, 5 years, I definitely have had some frustrations on Fedora. And it isn't an awesome distro, because it is. It's very awesome. There are some people that do some great work on it. But I find that there's more and more applications that I was so used to pulling, not even from the AUR, but from the regular repo, that I'm now having to go search for. So some of them I've been able to find as a Flatpak, and other ones I've had no option but to use an app image version of them, because they're not in the repo and that's the only thing that's provided from the website. So I have found that really frustrating for certain things. I guess I am okay with doing the work on some things like you, but then I'm a bit curmudgeon-y about the fact that, holy crap, it's not in the repo. I gotta go find it.
So I like AppImage. That's not really the discussion here, but I happen to like AppImage because they're easy to manage. So I use this AppImage manager that is actually Eric Adams, who turned me onto it some years back. I wrote an article on CubicleNate.com about it. And I use that now. Anytime I download an app image, when I execute the app image, it immediately basically takes it, puts it in the menu, and then puts it in a specific folder. And so it's really easy to manage and so forth. I really like that fact.
Right.
And then you can keep multiple versions. So like my Christmas light display application is called X Lights, and that is an app image. And what I like about that is sometimes I've gotten like a bum version came down, like there was just something wrong with it and I couldn't do it. So I didn't get rid of the previous version. I could just hop right back to it and just get rid of the other one. And that was very handy. So I really like app image for that fact. Really easy to manage. I've been told that Flatpak is just as good, but like, okay, I probably have to do some sort of a, now I'm going to sound like Matt here for a second, go on the terminal, do some kind of like a seance and write this really long command that I have to like hunt for all the little bits and pieces to make it work so I can get the version I want. And that's not really very practical. So in a way, I kind of think that app images, also they're very portable, are a little bit easier to manage applications, like bespoke applications that you would run that are not very well system integrated, I guess you could say. That's one thing that I've thought about in that regard. But I was just thinking as we're talking, there's probably a fifth category of my computer is my hobby. I want to play and tinker. I probably fall into that category because for me, like Matt, he just wants to hop in and play a game. So I just want to play games. I just want it to work. If I can't get it to run in Linux, I don't want to play that game. And if I get to tinker around and figure it out, that's kind of the fun part for me in computers, is that tinkering, that playing, that meddling about and figuring out how the different little bits talk to each other.
That definitely can be fun. It's just not fun when you've got work to get done on a machine and you're like, holy crap, it's broken right now. I need to use it. So there's
right
kind of that fine line between I need my system to work for work and I'd like to play and tinker with a few things, figure this out. So I guess it's a bit of both, but as long as the main things, the things that have to be done and get out on time, are working fluidly, that's not a problem. And I do have two drives in my main desktop for a reason, that if I want to tinker and play with something, I can do that on a secondary drive and leave my main working system alone and not touch it and go play and then come back. I do like to play with different things. I've been playing with different applications, been learning different things, and the older robotics team has a CNC, a Linux CNC, which is really super cool. And I'd love to get in and tinker and play with that. Actually, the one they have is borrowed. There was someone who donated it for a short time while they've been out of country for a couple of years. They're about to come back. And of course, they're going to want to take their CNC back. So of course, I volunteered. I hope Magneto didn't hear that, to help them as they work on building their next one.
Well, if Magneto didn't hear it, he heard it now.
He's not currently home, but I know he's going to hear this while he's at work. And then I'm going to get a call or text message asking me once again why I can't just keep my hands in my pockets and stop volunteering for stuff.
You tell him it's in your nature.
It is in my nature. It is so much in my nature that sometimes I over volunteer. But
it's kind of like Magneto and in his nature to break technology.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's your nature. So to fix it
works out. To Wendy's point, I kind of agree. Like, I like the exploration and the tinkering and the hobby end of it. But when it becomes, it's affecting my work, where the hobby becomes the work, is where it's like, okay, that now this is a problem. It's that real fine line, because realistically, we're more tech enthusiasts. We're more everything. We video game, you know, Wendy's even a video game person now, which is not something that I would ever thought comes out of my mouth to say.
Yes, there is one video game that I find time to play right now.
Nate, you're a retro gamer. We know that because you still think it's 1999.
97.
No, it's still too new. PlayStation 1, that's too new. Nintendo 64, still too new.
Yeah, I don't consider that vintage yet.
But to the point is, I honestly really do think we all kind of tick different categories in this whole thing, just because as technology fan, because a lot of what you're going to find is a lot of Linux users are technology fans. They're fans of tech in general. It doesn't matter if it's open source, proprietary. You know, we have a lean towards open source and free software stuff. But overall, we all like processors. We all like video cards and RAM and all the other stuff, for rate to repair, and all that stuff is awesome. So like, it's really hard to kind of pigeonhole a Linux user into like really one category. If we're specifically talking Linux user, I think that's why a lot of us kind of tick all kind of the boxes, except for maybe the neckbeard portion. I am not the one that will debate whether or not Vim or Nano or some of the more what I would consider dumb arguments about happen in the community, because honestly, I don't care. I'm going to use like gedit or kate or something if I'm going to go do text editing. Just, oh no, GUI app, go deal with it. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not going to fall into ever that neckbeard category. Like, I like helping new users. and that crowd because I can relate to them because I still have to deal with a lot of that stuff. So
right.
You're still a new user.
Always. Nate, even as a tech fan, if you ever stop learning.
I don't consider myself an expert. I mean, I guess I'm paid for my expertise, but I consider myself a seasoned novice at best.
I was going to say, Nate at expertise. Those words just don't go together.
No, they don't. And that's why I'd never call myself an expert. I'm nothing more than a seasoned novice.
But realistically, unless we're writing insert code language here, or if you're doing hex or, you know, whatever way of coding, unless you're doing that for the kernel, we're all really just novices.
I expect my Linux machine, I have for years now, I expect a certain level of performance out of it. And I don't want to faff about with different things. You know, when I install it, I expect a certain level of functionality. The fun of fixing basic things, I find, is now unacceptable.
You shouldn't have to work to get your printers up online. That should just happen, right? Is that the line you're talking about?
Yeah, but there's not an operating system that actually works like that. When you ask a printer to print something, it's a suggestion. It's not a command.
Okay, yes. Printers are their own bag of worms. Obviously, right. I don't own one.
Right. You own three. Four, actually. There's one not pictured.
Four if you include the 3D printer. Yes.
When you send a printer something to do, it thinks about it. Unlike other peripherals on your computer, which are more immediate, the keyboard, the monitor, they all operate immediately. So that said, I'd like to be able to get on the internet and access the websites or whatever it may be that needs to happen, or, you know, be able to work in a spreadsheet or, you know, fill in the blank here, whatever your basic office tasks are, without anything impeding me. And I will say that is pretty much the case anymore on Linux, outside of maybe every once in a while some crazy things like a kernel update and then your Bluetooth doesn't work right and you have to like go to an older kernel version. That's irritating, but it sorts itself out pretty quick. If I think about like my troubles in Windows, because I do use Windows regularly again, not proud of it, but it is the way it is. I mean, that has its own bag of problems too. Mm-hmm. It's not like that's immune to problems either. I don't use Macs, so I can't say for that, anything about that.
You're not missing anything out on macOS. I'm just saying, other than maybe some apps.
Well, you know, I would like to get one though at some point in time.
Just so you can test it, play with it. That side of you can say, hey, I have at least touched a Mac system. So when I say...
The last one I touched was from like 1980 something.
It's been a couple days ago.
About 5 years.
The Apple II does not count, Nate.
No, that's over here. I got an Apple IIc. That was the Macintosh Classic.
I know, because the Apple II was probably the last one you actually touched before that one.
I just did.
Exactly. But no, to your point, Nate, I'm very much kind of in the same camp. I use Windows. I've used macOS. Unfortunately, I stopped that pain. I expect Wi-Fi to work on things. That's why, as much as you would poke fun at me not being able to use the installer on... You know, the old installer, I should say. I will keep this realistic. Yeah.
Super simple now, barely an inconvenience.
Exactly. I will give OpenSUSE credit. The Wi-Fi installer is a ton better on the actual installer of the actual app for installing. Because unlike OpenSUSE, which has improved stuff, I have a Realtek system or a Realtek chip that will not install without me actually pulling stuff in from out of kernel, which is annoying. A non-functional Wi-Fi. Yay, on a appliance killer.
Well, that sounds like a ton of fun. And I'm pretty sure you're going to tell us a little bit more about that later. And we want to know what the rest of you think and what kind of Linux user are you? Are you kind of like us, a mixed mash bag of many different types of Linux user? Or do you have one specific category that you hang on to? Nate, syncing files can be a bit of a pain. And if you are, and we know you are, needing to use a Windows computer for work, how are you balancing that out between your multiple systems?
Well, I am slowly been moving most of my workload to basically running it on Linux without any problems. I still need Windows for a couple of things, but it's not really necessary at this point. I have a machine on standby, basically, if I need to use it. But for the most part, I can do everything on Linux just fine. In fact, some things I can just do better in Linux. And one of the things that I want to just talk about is OneDrive, Microsoft OneDrive. So where I work is a Microsoft-heavy organization, and that's probably not going to change no matter how much I want it to. So here I am, and rather than fight anything, I'm just going to basically work with it. And as such, OneDrive is something that I need to synchronize now. And I wrote an article 2021 about synchronizing your files, like Google Drive and OneDrive files, with NSYNC. NSYNC, not the band that Matt likes and probably still is a fan of and has pictures on his wall behind him. NSYNC, I-N-S-Y-N-C, for synchronizing your files. Now, it is paid software. It's proprietary. And I started testing it when it was free. I don't know, probably some 10 years ago now, when it became available. I was always one to support businesses in Linux applications, so I paid for it. And I paid for the additional whatever to do OneDrive. And I have to say, it works really well. And I like the integration into Dolphin much more than I like the integration into whatever the File Explorer thing is in Windows. It's not really a huge thing, but it's just a really convenient thing. And also like the collaboration tools that kind of go all along with it. So since I'm having to use Teams, I can access those OneDrive files and do like the Google Office type, you know, how you can work on the same thing. It works great. I'm really excited about how well that works. And just another, you know, reason why you don't actually have to use Windows in a Microsoft shop. So that's really it there. I'm just pretty happy about it. It works well. And I think there's actually a SharePoint add-on I can put to it as well. So that's something we'll be playing with here shortly. There is some talk about moving one of the departments away from the on-premises file share synchronization to using more OneDrive-centric so they can do better collaboration. That was actually a request as of yesterday. So I'm exploring that right now. I'm seeing what my options are as far as keeping everything synchronized or just moving it over and whatnot. And we're not anywhere close to using any limitations that Microsoft puts on us. So we're not that file heavy. But anyway, that's kind of what I've been playing with lately. One of the many things, I should say.
So you said you had an article on Cubicle Nate, but that's been a while ago. Did you do an updated one or did you update that one?
I have updated it. So it does have some updates on there. And it basically just verified that everything is correct. It could probably use an additional update. I know some better ways of doing things, but the information is still valid. But in all seriousness, Matt, you are purchasing hardware left and right. You bought another Atari VCS. Like, I'm impressed. This is two of the Atari VCSs.
He did.
What is it you're doing with this? I mean, how many computers have you purchased this year alone?
Bit of a glutton.
He is. Well, you know, he's a big time content creator, so he can afford it.
Right. So as far as Atari's purchase, yes, this is my second one. As far as hardware purchase this year.
He doesn't even know because it's been so much.
You would not be far off.
Oh, it's not bad. I mean, it's your cash, burn it, baby.
The VCS I got was actually bought last year on the winter sale that I got Nate to buy his on, which, Nate.
We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. Exactly. The reason I bought this was
the focus is you, Matt. We're not going to talk about my purchases. We're talking about your purchases. Let's keep on track here.
See, when you flip it back around,
it's not fair. It is fair that we just talk about you and your indiscretionary spending.
Says the guy who bought a framework.
That was not indiscretionary. That was a reward for needing stuff.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Anyway. Yes, I bought another Atari VCS simply for the fact that I am trying to use the VCS as like a Steam machine, essentially, right now. And I have the other secondary drive as the Kodi portion. The Steam OS, Chimera OS portion decided to update, and I'm not sure if it's an Atari issue or whatnot, but either way, there is a Wi-Fi Bluetooth issue that makes it non-functional, essentially, because there's no Wi-Fi and no Bluetooth. When I have the actual Atari controller, and this is the modern controller for those that are wondering, and it doesn't work without being plugged in.
Wait,
it's a wireless controller. You know this because you own one.
Yeah.
It's a wireless controller. The Bluetooth does not work on the console because of the chip, because of the Wi-Fi chip not working. So I'm not sure if it's an update that Atari pushed out, because I still have Atari OS on this as well. I updated Atari OS and all that stuff, which is Debian-based. Chimera OS is kind of its own thing. I'm not sure if that Realtek update and the update to Debian on the Atari VCS messed everything up or whatever. Everything works on Atari OS, not any other Linux distro whatsoever. Garuda, as an example. I installed Garuda just to be like, okay, we'll try Garuda. I get through the updates, the boot, and everything else on the first set. Everything works. Wi-Fi even works. Reboot the system. Nothing. The Wi-Fi is detected. It says it connects and it's limited connection. I've only had one other time this has been an issue with, and it's been because of a Realtek chip where you have to pull in out of kernel modules, and it was with the gateway machine that I bought. And I was like, I know what this is, and it's a giant headache.
Oh, I've had a similar issue on the Microsoft Surface devices. So the first boot and install is just fine. But if I didn't install the Surface kernel on that first boot after the installation, you'd get back into it. You'd have no Wi-Fi, nothing. It would just be this piece of hardware that has no internet connectivity whatsoever. And I know there's been lots of computers in the past that had no internet connectivity. But in this modern age, gosh dang it, when I'm firing up my computer, I typically need to access the internet. And so that was really frustrating. And because the Surface device has no hard line to it, you just basically had to reinstall the OS. Now, I know I talked to you about this beforehand, and that didn't even work for
you. So the RJ45 jack did not work. No Ethernet whatsoever. Nothing worked. Now, I will say that this was me plugging in Ethernet after boot. That could have been an issue. That could have been on me. After jumping through 15 hoops to try to at least get something working, I was a little annoyed. So that was about the last thing on my, all right, I give up list. Anyway, the whole point of buying this was to help with the development of Chimera OS on these type of embedded devices. So that way the install experience is a ton better than it currently is. If I'm installing this on a console-like device, doesn't matter if, you know, insert Realtek system here, chip here, or whatever. And yes, I did try installing an Intel AC card and it didn't work. So before anybody asked that, I spent $20 to try that. Didn't work. Shock. AMD system. Who would have thunk it? All that said, this machine is going to be helping with the development of Chimera OS because it's going to be testing specifically for Chimera OS. So I don't have to constantly nuke and pave and everything else with this particular system. The next portion is me upgrading the system and all that stuff so I can actually do all that testing because I want to give the install experience the best experience possible on the hardware, which I think is only fair.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's super awesome to be able to donate some hardware to people who are actually working on the development side so that they can be testing the stuff that they're working on. Yeah, it's great to be a dev working on something, but if you can't test it, I've been freaking out about this first video episode of LOL because I haven't done it yet. I can't imagine putting out an OS version to people to use when I haven't been able to test it.
I'm actually impressed that Matt is giving something away. I mean, you're not charging them double for it. I mean, you're actually doing a nice thing.
Matt doesn't like to say it, but this guy actually does have a heart and a pretty big one.
Yeah, it's true. He's like a Care Bear.
Wendy, you're hurting my cred. Knock it off.
I'm sorry.
We all have a reason we do things. Not going to lie, this is a totally selfish reason for me to do it. It makes a better experience for me. It just happens to be nice that I'm doing it, but the end result is for a better experience for me. Totally not going to lie.
It's actually a good point. I think that's overlooked a lot in the open source is people who do things for the open source is largely for self-interest that just happens to help other people. And so, Matt, you are essentially the example of the open source community member. You are contributing to benefit yourself, but it benefits other people at the same time. So out of your selfishness, others benefit. Weird.
Funny how that works, isn't it, Nate?
I think it's great.
So while I am donating hardware and stuff, dealing with a lot of software, Wendy, it looks like you are also dealing with some software in CAD specifically?
I am, and I really want to learn other CAD software, but right now it's LeoCAD, and I'm pretty sure I've talked about it before. So this is an open source piece of CAD software, and it's focused on Legos. The last, I think, 3 weeks, at least 2 weeks, we have had the kids working inside LeoCAD to build their robots first. And we were noticing, especially last year, as they were tinkering and playing and building, but yeah, that's a ton of fun, but we were just throwing parts at it. And some of these kids are going to move on from the first Lego League onto FTC, in which the rule is you CAD the robot first and we only buy the parts that you can prove to the mentors that they actually need so that the team budget isn't being wasted on parts that aren't going to get used. And I thought that this was a great idea. Not that we don't have a ton of parts, because we absolutely do. But it really gets the kids thinking more about the robot design stuff. We're putting some effort, some thinking, some processing into how am I going to build this thing and not just digging through the kit and putting parts on and taking parts off in that process. It's fun. It's a fun way to do it. but we would like them to develop that skill of that forward thinking and working in CAD first. So I'm really glad to see the kids have been moving in steps forward and all of that. And I decided that I was going to play in LeoCAD today. It's one of the things that I've been meaning to do. I mean, I've played with it a little bit, but I hadn't really taken the time to build a whole bunch of stuff. So I was in LeoCAD, and one of the great things about it, especially because this is Lego based, is you can build sub models. So one of the things the team voted on is they want to have wheel guards around their wheels. So in a sub model, I built the left wheel and the right wheel for the large wheels and the small wheels. And then those can be brought into my build for the main chassis of the robot. They can do sub models for all of their attachments. It's incredible in the flexibility. Plus, they can print out instructions, which is even more important than it sounds, because last year, the kids needed to upgrade the robot. So they started to take it apart, and they got whatever fixed, and then went to put it back together. And I hear, we're not exactly sure how it goes back together.
All these extra pieces.
Exactly. Now they're doing the fix in CAD, and then reprinting out those instructions to make sure the robot goes back together the same way every time. So I was showing my daughter the sub models that I'd created, and that I oriented each wheel section that has its guards around it in what I want front, back, left, right. So that when I pulled it into the main model, what I wanted facing front was already facing front in the model. Mm-hmm. She's like, that's really, really cool. So I'm having a lot of fun in it. I want to show the kids some of those as we're going along. I think it's an incredible skill for them. And I am amazed how many different parts just come pre-installed in that software. It's crazy.
It is. And I've used it extensively for just like for my own creations and such, or mocks as they're called in the Lego world. But I did put a link in the show notes how I used LeoCAD to basically build and design a thing using existing designs to, and whatnot, to like kind of modify it out and then and also publish it as well. It's really handy, especially if you use the flat pack. It all comes all nicely packaged. You don't have to hunt for the parts files and whatever because of redistribution issues. And anyway, it's great. And I think the great thing about LeoCAD too is like, let's say you come up with a design, you can kind of, you know, build it out like you would normally, but then you can take that design, turn it into a CAD model, and then you can redo the design or improve the design in virtual space and then bring that back to the prototype you built. So it's actually a great way to do the prototype redesign, the cycle there at a much more rapid pace, because you get to see and play with things virtually and physically in tandem.
So you've used CAD at work before, not anymore, but in a previous job. So do you think that it's great that the kids are currently starting on that process at a younger age?
Absolutely.
Now, then later.
You're actually going through the product development cycles using LeoCAD and doing your prototyping, whatever you want to call it, what you're doing your robot builds. So that is actually the product development cycle that they're actually learning, not necessarily in a formal sense, but in the conceptual sense. So then you have, you know, sub models, your sub assemblies and your master assembly, which is not the terms that LeoCAD uses, but that's the terms that you would use in product development. You have your master assembly that has all of these little parts and pieces. And within that master assembly, you have it broken down into different parts, different sub assemblies that go along with that. And that actually helps you really manage your part count a lot better too. And also when you do design improvements, it makes it a lot more efficient for carrying those updates through to the final assembly.
Yeah. And I noticed one thing inside of the instructions for LeoCAD is you can have it highlight what the new parts are, which is really pretty interesting.
That must be a new feature.
It must be, if you haven't seen it before. I was just kind of playing around with the instructions and how to set up the cameras inside of LeoCAD, because that's one of the cool things I've also seen in this piece of Lego CAD software. If you just go to the base, hey, let's build instructions without adding cameras, things can be off to the side or not look all that great. But you choose how it looks on that instruction page by the cameras that you lay out inside of it. And you can add lighting and all kinds of crazy stuff. You can get pretty heavy into it.
That's a really cool thing about it too. You can make it as good as you want. Also, you can do rendering of it as well. Mm. That's another fun thing too. So if you want to render it out before you, for the cover of your instruction manual, I suppose, you could do that as well.
Well, and I'm sure the kids will go ahead and do this. This is going to be a great addition into their robot design. I've actually been calling it more of their engineering portfolio because they're spending really more time on the engineering side of it this year. So I can't wait to see what they eventually come up. I think there's 4 different versions being built right now in LeoCAD. And then after they're finished building, they can come together and say, hey, we love this aspect of this one. Because even though they voted on different aspects, it's amazing how different kids are putting those same things together in different ways. Instead of just picking one robot, which they might, hey, decide we like this one best, they could also go through and say, I like this aspect of this one and this aspect of this one, and let's merge them in together for our final robot design. So great stuff for their engineering portfolio. And I'm glad to hear that these are skills that they can use not only as they move to the next robotics, but potentially later down the road in life.
And I mean, Lego engineers are a real thing too.
That they are.
That's not just a hobby, but people are paid to design these things. So it's not like this doesn't lead to nowhere.
Someone comes up with our mission models every year. I don't know if those are volunteers, because everybody at first is a volunteer. There isn't a paid employee at first, or at least there might be someone super high up, but I don't think so. And Lego is involved in the first Lego League 3 teams. I think there's 3 different Lego League categories. But somebody's got to create our mission models every year, which I think would be a blast.
It's because it would be a blast.
Now it's your turn to toss in your 2 cents on today's topics. Hit the discourse forum or drop us a line under this video or podcast, depending on how you're consuming the show. Check out the contact form by visiting tuxdigital.com/contact. If you'd like to hang out with us on our preferred social media, see the links in the bottom of the show description. Find other great shows like Fit and Fueled, Destination Linux, Linux Saloon, and more at tuxdigital.com. Show off your love for your favorite podcasts and shows by visiting the Tux Digital merch store. Grab yourself some awesome swag like the Gamercentric, I paused my game to be here shirt.
Every week.
That you do. Or join Team Wendy with some Sinister Wendy swag. As always, we thank you for joining us. We'll be back next episode with another awesome episode of Linux Out Loud. Until then, keep the banter friendly, the conversation somewhat on topic, and have fun doing it.
She's evil.
Not evil. This lighting is not mood lighting. I don't know.